driver who's always in trouble for helping others. In Ankle Tag in half an hour, career fraudster Bob decides it's time to get back on the horse, dating-wise, and strikes up a friendship with a woman he meets in a local museum. And what makes a man betray his country to fight for another cause? Ambition? Politics? Love? Waverley by Walter Scott is on the 4Extra website. Bill Boson is the highly popular driver of the country school bus, whose speed at the wheel makes school journeys a hazard and an adventure.
Oddballs, four short plays for radio by Don Howarth. Number 2, Bill Boson, speedily to school.
Students just arrived from Mr. Boson's bus. Don't attempt to push through to your usual places. Move along the wall and stay there. Quickly, please. Mr. Boson, could we speak later? All right, Miss Winkle, proceed.
Mr. Boson, Bill, please do understand. Punctuality is essential.
Yes, Headmaster. This poor old chap at Bench Road
Mr.
End...
Mr. Boson, your bus is a school bus. Poor old chaps, by definition, do not qualify.
Has a mile to walk to his sister's.
But it's against the regulations, Mr. Boson, to give lifts.
His right leg. There's a gyrating movement of the hip, followed by an outward thrust of the knee and... kick of the toe.
Well, a disablement, I understand.
As though his leg was operated on an eccentric cam.
Mr. Boson, I don't insist on the letter of the regulations. I turn a blind eye. But please, Bill, please strive to arrive more punctually.
Yes, Headmaster.
Make it your ambition.
I will, Headmaster.
Mr. Boson drove us all in from the countryside. He was a big man, with a jolly red face and a heavy moustache. We never knew his real name, but one day, just after he got the job, a little girl, impressed by his naval-style cap, called him Mr. Boson, and the name stuck.
Good morning.
Morning.
This is your driver speaking. The outside temperature is 17 degrees centigrade. Pressure 1031 millibars. Our speed is 30 mile an hour, and our estimated time of arrival 0850 hours. The weather, as ever in the vicinity of school, bright and sunny.
Yeah. Mr. Boson, can I record you on my cassette?
On your what?
My cassette. See, in real aeroplane.
Isn't this a real aeroplane?
But then that fly. Well, when it says this is your pilot speaking. Well, it isn't your pilot speaking.
Then that's a lie.
No, it's a cassette.
A recording.
Oh, well, well. Do whatever's necessary, Paul.
Switch on, then. Go on, Mr. Boson. The farm we're passing to Starboard...
is the property of Herbert Snout Esquire, whose comely daughter, Julie...
Hey!
...is stepping up into the off-roading. Whilst to port, the good yeoman himself is driving his new tractor along the skyline.
Mr. Boson, there's Mr. Pickles holding up his stick again.
God's recreation, Mr. Boson. We'd sung as far as that.
Yes, Headmaster.
Fresh from the word is unacceptably late. Where his feet pass, inexcusably so, but God's recreation, Mr. Boson.
It has the most frightful ring about it of being late, not by minutes, but by millennia.
You see, Headmaster, this old chap with the leg...
Yes, mounted on an eccentric cam.
In deference to your wishes for prompt arrival, made such haste down his garden path that his boot shot off, and we were some time searching for it in the nettles.
Mr. Borson, the other drivers managed to arrive on time.
Well, they did. And everybody knew why. If you weren't at the road end right on the dot, they simply sailed past, and some, seeing a boy or girl bolting along a farm track, would deliberately step on it, leaving people stranded within yards of a pick-up point, and on wet or slushy mornings half drowning them with spray from the wheels.
Dear Headmaster, nothing in this missive should be took as reflecting on Mr. Bosun's bus. Far from it. It's a real pleasure for him all whipping along to school, whereas at one time you'd have thought there was off to prison. And the patience of that man. He is kindness embodied, sitting smoking his pipe while late scholars stumble out of bed. And we've had some with Charlie, which brings me to my point, which is... It says in Charlie's report he has gaps in his knowledge. Well, he might well have because of all this arriving late. It's all right if your child is bright, but Charlie's father is thick, as mentioned above. Also, his two brothers, I think it is hereditary. And three thickens in one house is quite enough, thank you, without Charlie going that way. So would you please top up the gaps in his knowledge, which the lad is not to blame for, and oblige. Yours respectfully... Connie Cupboard.
Dear Mrs. Cupboard, thank you for your letter of the 23rd. And I think, if you would, Miss James, just the usual. Points noted and will be very much borne in mind.
Yes, Miss Dripping.
Now, the Director of Education's note on the same theme. What are we to reply? Informal. Mm-hmm. A clean breast. My dear Charles, I'm sorry our old friend, Councillor Mrs. Gasper, is snapping at your heels again. Full stop. The bus driven by the new driver has arrived sometimes less punctually than we might have wished. Full stop. He has indeed allowed himself to be delayed by pupils who have failed to reach their pick-up point on time, comma. But because of his solicitude, the total attendance of pupils from his route has been remarkably high, and they do arrive, comma, albeit tardily, comma, in a most cheerful and, one thinks, therefore receptive state of mind. Full stop.
Mr. Borson, it's no use waiting. He won't come.
Give him time.
He doesn't come, Mr. Borson, not on Tuesdays.
Because it's woodwork, and he weighs 12 stone. And he give this nail such a belt with the hammer, he split the bench in two.
Yeah, and the vice went flying through the window of the music room.
Yeah.
And demolished Miss Winkle's piano.
Poor Freddie Foggan. I think that laugh had mocked him from the day he started school. He lived with his grandparents in a cottage up a muddy lane, miles from anywhere. So he had no pals from round home, and he was no good at lessons or games. And even little kids he could have swatted like flies, learned to jibe at him before they learned to wipe their snotty noses. But the next Tuesday, Freddie Foggan was already in the bus before its first point of call, installed in the seat of honour which everybody wanted beside Mr. Bosun.
How you got there then, eh?
He come for me early. He's going to take my case up.
This lad, Headmaster, he's built on wrong scale for knocking up tiddling objects like plant pot stands and bookends.
It's a question of acquiring the facility, Mr. Bolson.
Ah, that's what he has acquired, haven't you, Freddy?
What?
You've cobbled up a hencot.
With my grandad.
And you've erected a fence of railway sleepers.
By myself.
So, if he could be turned to something more on his natural scale...
We've no great pressing need for hencots in the school, nor fences of railway sleepers.
I wasn't suggesting...
Well, quite so, Bill, quite so. Could he play in the bottom edge of sticking doors?
Could you play in the bottom edge of sticking doors?
I could play in the bottom edge of sticking doors.
Play in the bottom edge of sticking doors. Full stop. The transformation has been remarkable. Full stop. He has become a confident and responsive boy, capable of the heavier tasks in joinery. And indeed, as I look through the window, He is at this moment ascending a ladder, comma, hammer in hand, comma, to make good defects in the glass roof of the exterior corridor. Full stop. He has become a most confident and capable craftsman. Make that, Miss James, bodes fair to become a most confident and capable craftsman. Full stop.
Boys and girls, quiet, please. If I could just have a word. Now, we have arrived late once or twice in recent days.
No.
And the headmaster, who is a very reasonable man... yes, he is. ...has had his bottom kicked by higher authority. So, we must endeavour to arrive at our ETA of 08:50 hours. And, to make sure we do... Let's aim for 08:45 and everybody be ready. Starting tomorrow, 5 minutes earlier.
I haven't been late, Mr. Bosun. You make us late by giving people lifts.
You're quite right, Jenny. We must cut that out. Oh, but there's Mr. Pilchard stranded in the road. Won't your car start, Mr. Pilchard?
Could you run me downtown?
Certainly, Mr. Pilchard.
Mr. Bosun, you just said no lift.
I did, my dear, but this is an exceptional case. Step aboard, Mr. Pilchard.
Thank you, Mr. Bosun.
That's a heavy one, Mr. Pilchard.
Oh, that'll be trouble. Be double trouble. My car won't start. My cord won't stop. If you just drop me at the road end.
We'll drive you all the way for what it's worth.
Mr. Bosun, we'll be late.
It's only a small detour. We'll make up the time.
And we did too. We dropped Mr. Pilchard off at the little supermarket where he was manager, then out of town and back to our route.
Our speed is 70 miles an hour, and in a few moments we will be landing at our destination, the estimable educational establishment of Ernest Epping, Esquire, MA, BSc, and BA. We hope you have enjoyed your journey. Please remain in your seats until the engine stops. Thank you.
Well, we made it before morning had broken, day after day, summer and winter. And what's odd, when I look back, I never remember a grey, ordinary day. I remember days of howling gales and of floods, of still summer mornings when the air shimmered above the radiator, and hard evenings in winter when frost sparkled round street lamps. I remember his laughing red face reflected in his driving mirror, and the bus bolting along and the children all except this prim little girl.
Mr. Bosun, you shouldn't exceed the speed limit. It's against the law.
Egging him on to a desperate pace to make good the time lost by his ill-considered acts of kindness. We ran Mr. Pilchard down to his supermarket whenever he had his double trouble.
Regrettably, Mr. Bosun, I am similarly afflicted once more.
We gave postwoman a lift, and the old chap with a leg mounted on an eccentric cam, and his uncle's pal, and his uncle's pal's pig. Parson, and old Mrs. Smallwood, whose ends we shifted in luggage boot. And once, when a Land Rover was broken down, we even had the personal company of Farmer Snout's comely daughter, Julie. Mr. Bosun could never bring himself to leave anybody stranded. And we had some wild races to make up time.
S-Benz, Mr. Bosun!
Faster! Faster!
Bosun! Don't get out of the way!
Are not part of the syllabus, Mr. Chair, and the drivers of school buses must be instructed to cease, desist, and refrain from flying displays.
Councillor Mrs. Gasper told the Education Committee and continued,
such practices are not conducive to safety.
And they're not, Mr. Bosun, they're not. The woman's a pest, but she has an unassailable point.
Yes, Headmaster. endeavouring to arrive before God's re-creation.
But not by throwing all caution to the winds, Mr. Bowson. It's a most alarming sight to see pedestrians on all sides leaping for cover as you come rocketing up the street with your tyres smouldering and your windscreen caked with dead flies. See, this lady writes...
It cannot be good for Charlie's head having his thoughts rattled about like this, and I'm very worried about his future.
But what am I to reply, Mr. Bowson? I could well say, have no fears for Charlie's future, madam. If he continues to travel in Mr. Bowson's bus, he's unlikely to have one. But is that kind? Is that reassuring to the poor woman?
No, Headmaster.
The new bypass opens next month, I believe. Make a resolution now, Bill, to enjoy the economy of time it will afford without mixing it with the speedsters, who will no doubt be drawn in from far and wide.
It wasn't us who started the racing. Our bus bowled along so steadily that blokes on scooters and in wheelchairs went shooting past us.
Get going, Mr. Bowson, and get after him.
No, set a good example. That's what the headmaster said.
Quite right, my dear. There's lots to see. The countryside's quite enchanting when it doesn't pass in a rattling blur. Note the flora and fauna. Observe the birds. Identify the trees. Watch the bubbling up of the morning cumulus.
But you shouldn't smoke your pipe, Mr. Bowson.
No, I shouldn't.
A clapped-out open lorry roared past us, carrying a load of workmen who coarsely put their fingers up at our bus.
Get after him, Mr. Bowson!
No, we must not be provoked.
Are the police not aware of these desperate goings-on, Councillor Gasper?
They are indeed, Mr. Chair. I personally have made them aware on no less than 13 occasions.
No, but
you must understand, Mr. Chair. The road traffic police are themselves institutional racers. Summoned to the bypass, their reaction is not to stop the racing, but to participate in it.
We had nobody to bother much about except this lorry load of workmen I mentioned. The driver scraped past close so they could taunt us in passing. He prided himself in demonstrating to us how fast he could tech bends, regardless of the fact that the faster he went round, the more workers were flung over the side. We all crowded round the back window to see them climbing back out of the ditch.
Dear Headmaster, what I've took up the pen again for is to appeal for even more moderation for the sake of Charlie's cousin, who's got a job laying cables and travels on the lorry. So I have a foot in both camps, what with Charlie in the bus and his cousin on the lorry. That is when he's not falling off it. Charlie's dad says it's centrifugal force, but that's no help or consolation to the lad when he's rolling about in the road. So what I am saying, dear Headmaster, please prevail on Mr. Bowson to continue to eschew any dicing with the lorry, which everybody knows is not his fault, and, of course, not to be drawn into contest with Mickey Mowbray, who, on his return from Switzerland last Wednesday, was spied buzzing about in a new Ferrari.
Mickey Mowbray, sunburned and sun-spectacled, was well disposed to our bus from the outset. Being a gentleman of sorts, unlike some of the blokes on the lorry, he did not make taunting gestures but gave us a friendly toot and sometimes laid on a demonstration of skill in his Ferrari, overtaking by sliding his back end across in front of the bus so breathtakingly close to Mr. Bowson's radiator that from any place in the bus but right at the front you thought for a heart-stopping moment that we'd gone over him. One bright morning as he pulled out to perform his manoeuvre, a tractor nosed out 100 yards ahead. Mickey scraped past our bus with a fearful bang. His brilliant motor, shedding parts, came to rest facing the wrong way. Our robust bus suffered no worse than a stove-in panel.
Good morning, gentlemen. Anybody hurt?
No, Constable.
No.
What happened?
I just sort of came out.
I don't want to know. This your vehicle disintegrating on the highway, sir?
A friend's.
Oh, shift it off the carriageway, please. Shovel it up. Good morning.
Well, gosh, Mr. Bosun. Mea culpa. Mea multi culpa.
Don't worry. Just a dent.
I'll pay. Save any paperwork. Cash job. Say, 200 quid up a limit.
That's very kind. You're stranded. Can we offer you a lift?
Look.
No lift for nobody, Mr. Bosun. That's the rule.
Exceptional circumstances, my dear. Times of disaster. Where might we drop you off?
The airport, please.
The airport?
If you'd be so kind.
Well, yes. Yes, sir, certainly.
Mr. Bosun, that's miles out of our way.
We'll make it up, Jenny. Do you want to see the destination board?
No. Let's get over to the desk. Here's the 200 quid.
Oh, thank you indeed. And where should I send the change?
Don't worry. We'll run into each other, no doubt. Though we don't want to do too much more of that. Yeah. Great knowing you.
What about your car? Can I do anything?
Yes, well, confession time. It's not my car. It belongs to my girlfriend's husband.
Doesn't he know you've got it?
He doesn't know I exist.
No.
Well, it seems, Bill, you've not only repeated the old familiar offences in a resounding manner, but you've landed us all into the middle of a scandal.
How, Headmaster?
All over the front pages of the newspaper.
I don't read him.
Wise man. But please, Bill, do not undermine my case by further bursts of aberrant behaviour. Let us all seek to lead a quiet and blameless life.
Well, Mr. Bosun did his best. And it's ironical that what led to his downfall was none of the grave faults the authorities had under scrutiny, but the condoned occasional kindness of giving Mr. Pilchard a lift towards his supermarket.
You double trouble again, Mr. Pilchard.
Oh, much worse, Mr. Bosun. Treble trouble. Me car won't start, me goat won't stop, and me elephant's handed his cards in.
Your elephant?
A man prances round in an elephant suit, and there's a fairy with a wand.
It's an advertising promotion.
What for?
A remedy for the common cold.
Is it effective?
Oh, most extremely so. But these hooligans gave me elephant a going over, and I can't find another big strong man.
You could do it, Mr. Bosun.
You're certainly built for the role, Mr. Bosun. If you could see your way to give me an hour in the middle of the day. I know you've been commanded to harden your heart, but that only applies to the journeys, doesn't it?
And so, at lunchtime, Mr. Bosun, affable as ever, appeared outside the supermarket in a plastic elephant suit. Some of us had sneaked out of school to go down. There was a girl who looked frozen stiff, dressed as a fairy, and Mr. Pilchard read a spiel of which, because of his cold, only a few words were intelligible.
A sure remedy for the relief of the common cold. The fairy touch with the elephant effect.
Very boring. A few gaping women with fags and prams, and some old biddies shuffling past without properly stopping to watch. Then suddenly, these three yobbos slipped through the crowd and tied Mr. Bosun's trunk round a bollard.
No, please, boys, don't start on the elephant again.
He untethered Mr. Bosun's trunk and went back to gabbling through his spiel.
The jumbo size with the elephant effect.
And these yobbos slid through again, put Mr. Bosun on his back and trussed up his legs with his trunk.
Please, do not annoy the elephant.
But they had annoyed him. And like many gentle people, Mr. Bosun, once aroused, was very angry indeed. He jerked his trunk free, leapt to his feet and ran amok in the crowd, pummeling people with his paws and cracking them with sideswipes of his plastic trunk. And in the scuffling, Charlie Cupboard had his shirt ripped. And two shelves were knocked over, half burying an old lady under an avalanche of falling tins.
Quadruple trouble. Please, boys, please. We're going to wind up with a stock of dented tins.
Dear Headmaster, Mr. Bosun has a lot of influence over the children and he doesn't ought to nurture useless ambitions. Charlie now wants nothing but to be an elephant and gives you a mouthful if you say different. And the openings are too limited. But quite apart from his torn shirt, the lady who went down under the peas and peaches was Charlie's grandma's cousin and had brought up a family of 12, all living, none in prison. So I return to my point that being an elephant is a bad example and irresponsible.
The word stuck. It stuck fatally.
Irresponsible.
Most irresponsible.
Utterly irresponsible in every direction.
They said at the Parent Teachers Association, and Councillor Gasper told the Education Committee,
the man is irresponsible and he will have to go.
Yeah.
It's no good, Headmaster. I will have to go. You'll only jeopardise your own position if you get yourself any further mixed up in all this bickering.
Leave me to look after my position.
So long, Ernest.
Mr. Bosun. Bill! Bill!
The headmaster caught him at the porch. It was a winter afternoon and Freddie Foggan was fitting a storm guard to the door to cover the gap left by his vigorous planing in the summer.
Bill, I'm most willing to go before the committee and state a formal case.
Bless you, Ernest. But it's time I moved on anyway.
Moved on? Where to? It was only afterwards we realised how little we knew about him. Who he was, where he came from, what he had done before. He took off the naval cap that was several sizes too small and presented it to the headmaster.
Cheerio, Ernest.
Good luck.
He passed the dark and empty bus and walked away. The headmaster turned back into school, saying half to himself and half to Freddie Foggan,
irresponsible. Is that the kind of man you call irresponsible?
And Freddie Foggan, two slow tears on his cheeks, not remotely understanding what the headmaster was asking, replied,
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird.
In Oddballs, Bill Bosun was played by Sean Curry, the narrator by Peter Meakin, and the headmaster by Russell Dixon. Mrs. Cupboard was played by Julie Mears, Mrs. Gasper by Gillian Goodman, Mr. Pilchard by Graham Colclough, and Mickey Mowbray by David Thorpe. Freddie was played by Barry Farrimond, Jenny was played by Holly Granger, and Charlie by Will Haig. All other parts were played by members of the cast. Oddballs was written by Don Howarth, produced by Sue Wilson, and directed in Manchester by Julie Beckett.
Of the new day.
Next week in Oddballs, late one Saturday night, Wilfred Parkin brings a man with a strange problem to a hospital reception.
Classic comedy on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Hello and welcome. You'll be delighted to know that this week I am finally and definitely going to bring it out. So, yes, if you go round to your local booksellers...
Oh, no, you haven't written a book.
Yes, I have. Oh. And everything that's ever been inside of me has gone into it.
What is it, a medical dictionary?
No, it's my second book of poetry, Vol 2.
Oh, I never knew you'd written Vol 1.
No, that's because I wrote under a pen name.
Oh! Oh, and what is your pen name, Ballpoint?
No. Fountain.
Yes, Kenneth J. Fountain. And I got the inspired title for the book from the fact that I used to get up at 6:30 in the morning to write these poems.
What's it called?
From Bed to Verse.
I recently written a poem dedicated to you, Joan.
Oh, Hugh, darling, read it to me.
Oh, well, all right. If you press.